Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Golden State Warriors move the needle around here, I think, more than anything, and that is where we will always start our conversation with Warriors head coach Steve Kerr, who's nice enough to join us for the first time in a long time. Thanks for coming on back, Steve. I don't know who convinced you to do this, but we certainly appreciate it. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. His name is Raymond Ritter, so that's the guy who convinced me to do this.
Thank you, Raymond Ritter. Do you say that, hey, this is the off season? I'm more Team USA than really working with the Warriors right now, so this still feels like a favor?
No, I just say, you know, whatever Raymond wants, Raymond gets, because he deserves that kind of a respect.
Now, Raymond Ritter or Raymond Ratto? Let's just make sure we're on the same page here.
Definitely Ritter.
Okay, fair enough. Ray, you knew that was the answer.
Oh, I'm amazed it took him that long to say the word.
Steve, I know you got you know, your own tournament that you're getting ready for right now, and your off season did not last very long at all. But were you able, after a trying year for the Warriors, to just kind of separate yourself from basketball for just a little while to kind of clear your headspace before you got right back at it with Team USA?
Yeah. I mean, I got out of town a little bit. And even being in town in the Bay, you know, it's just such a different rhythm, you know, not having games, not having practices. So just with the season ending, you naturally get a lot more rest because there's nothing that's pending next, you know, and so there, you know, there's been a few different things that I've been involved with, draft workouts or, you know, Team USA or whatever, but it's once the NBA season ends, it really is a time to kind of take a big sigh of relief and get a little rest.
As you lean in and out of a Warriors offseason and lean in and out of Team USA to kind of, you know, have a conversation about your other job, how is the offseason going for the Warriors as far as you're concerned? Are you happy with the way the ping pong balls landed? And, you know, so much of our conversation has been about, do you draft, do you trade? Or are these conversations that you're having with Bob, or are you still at the player evaluation purely let's find out what the draft pool is portion of the conversation?
Yeah, well, there's been a lot going on. Obviously, we made some changes to our coaching staff, which have been really, really positive and exciting, but also difficult. Not easy to say goodbye to guys who have been fantastic and loyal and, you know, great teammates, and, you know, guys you've been through the wars with for, you know, 7 years. That's not easy, but I think, you know, adding some new blood, new faces, new voices, I think that's important. And so I'm really excited about some of the things we've done on the staff. And then I think, you know, getting 7-14 is really a pretty nice spot to be in. You know, the draft is generally regarded as pretty deep. And I know our front office is, you know, really doing their homework. And so it's a chance for us to get better. So it's been an exciting summer.
When you talk about getting new voices, what exactly does that mean, at least in this case? Is it that they needed to hear what you want from them with different teaching methods? Is it are you thinking about, you know, some change in the shape of your philosophy? How do you determine when voices need to get changed? And what is the tone you're listening for when you want those changes?
Well, I suppose, Ray, it's probably not that different from a lot of work environments where, you know, if you bring the exact same group of people back to work every year, year after year, it's harder to grow. It's harder to change. And I think, you know, we've been obviously very successful here and have had some great years. But I think you always have to be looking to get better and to push forward and look at trends around the league and think about your own practices and what can you do better. And that's what this has been all about. And so the guys we've brought in are full of ideas, full of things that, you know, maybe I haven't thought of, things that will maybe look different structurally within our staff, but also strategically with our team. I think we need that. I think every organization has to do that. I just don't think you can do the same thing over and over again and expect to grow. And so that's what this is about. And that's what we're trying to do is create some change, but maintain our culture. You know, we don't want to change who we are, but we want to think about our tactics and think about how we can get better.
Obviously, part of getting better is going to involve James Wiseman, at least as it stands right now. I know you've talked a ton about what was a very uneven and disrupted and complicated first year for him. And part of the problem with him has always been we haven't gotten to see that much. And that whether that's you guys before you drafted him or all of us as of now, from what you did see last year, what do you feel like you learned about him that you can apply to sort of how you're coaching him and how he's used with your team moving forward?
Well, he really is a sponge, and he's a guy who wants to learn, wants to work, wants to be a big part of the team, very motivated. James is just a great kid. I think that was reinforced. That's what we thought before the draft last year, and all of that was reinforced. Obviously, the setback of the injury, along with, you know, not having summer league last year or this year, and not having training camp last year, all that stuff has just put him behind where he would have been otherwise. But that's okay. You know, that's, you just roll with the punches and you push forward. So I think the biggest thing is, you know, with Clay coming back this year, with the momentum that we picked up, you know, last year at the end of the season, I think we're going into this year with a different mindset. You know, last year was more about, hey, let's just, you know, see what we've got. We'll start James from opening night and see what he's got and throw him into the deep end a little bit. I think this year will be much more sort of streamlined. You know, let's put him in positions where he can really help us on game nights and where we can really help develop him on practice days. And as that process goes forward, you know, he'll have a chance to play more and more if he's ready to help us win games. And if not, that's fine. We'll keep developing him because he's 20 years old. And, you know, I know everybody's impatient, wants him to be great now. It just doesn't work that way. But if we continue to develop him and we're having a great season, that's the whole plan. That's the whole idea, whether he's playing, you know, 15 minutes or 30 minutes or anything in between. So we want to win and we're committed to that. And over the long haul, we're going to develop James, and we feel like he's going to be our starting center, at some point for a long, long time ahead.
Steve Kerr here on 95.7 The Game. So Klay Thompson is obviously on everybody's mind. We see him kayaking around the bay on Instagram. It looks like he is really, really doing everything he can to come back in the best shape and good headspace. But to expect him to be ready to go opening night, still at this point, feels like a little bit of fool's gold. As you look at his recovery trajectory, when are you really expecting to think you will have Klay at a full go in this coming season?
Well, I think if you just look at Achilles injuries in general, you generally say, well, it's at least a year before somebody's going to be back out on the floor. And I don't know the exact date, but I want to say late November was when he got the injury last year. I know it was draft day, and the draft was pushed back quite a bit. So sometime in November was what I remember. So I think you go on that timeline and you just adjust accordingly, you know, according to how he's doing. Good news is he's really been diligent with his work. He and Rick Celebrini have worked closely all summer. He's right on schedule. He's been on the floor running now for the last few weeks. I think the light is finally at the end of the tunnel. But, you know, when we get close to the season and he gets closer and closer, then we're obviously going to be very, very careful, and we'll lean on the advice of our training staff to let us know when he's ready to play.
Steve, obviously you're back in the room, in the gym, with the owner of the most famous Achilles in recent NBA history, and Kevin Durant. Do you garner any way to is Kevin Durant not only serving as an inspiration for Clay, obviously, but for you, and I'm guessing anyone coming back from an Achilles, that you can come back like that? That's got to be good news. And just on a personal note, are you having fun being around Kevin again, and vice versa?
Yeah, it's been great. We're having so much fun together, and you know, this whole process is really amazing to work with this group of coaches and these players. And, you know, so to be around maybe guys we've competed against, you know, like Damian Lillard, for example, or Bam Adebayo, you know, guys who we've had to do battle with, and then all of a sudden they're on your team, you know, that's amazing. And then to be reunited, whether it's with, you know, Draymond after a month, or, you know, Kevin after a couple of years, it's great stuff. It's you know, basketball is kind of a great connector, and so here we are all together and kind of pushing forward, trying to get ready for Tokyo, and it's been really fun. But the first part of your question, Kevin is absolutely an inspiration to Clay and to those of us who are, you know, coaching Clay, because Kevin does not look one bit different to me coaching him now than he did 2 years ago when he was playing for the Warriors. So it's really, really encouraging.
I'm going to assume that you did not catch Andre Iguodala's appearance on JJ Redick's podcast, but he told a number of interesting stories, one of which was about a practice where Steph, you know, was doing insane Steph things early in Andre's time with the Warriors, and that he and Sean Livingston sort of stopped for a minute in the middle of practice and said, you know, I don't think I've ever seen anything like this before. And I'm just wondering if you have in your head, like, the light bulb moment where, even after seeing him from the outside, where once you got in the door, all of a sudden you saw something Steph was doing and just thought, man, he's even more special and different than I realized.
Well, I always go back to the shot that was actually televised and my reaction to it. It was a game early that first year, you know, 7 years ago, when I was coaching for the first time, and Steph made the dribble move through about four different Clippers and shot a step back 28 footer, and the camera panned to me, and I'm holding my head in disbelief. Like, what are you doing? You guys remember that clip? They showed it over and over again. That was actually the moment where I finally realized I have to completely shift my opinion of what's a good shot and what's a bad shot with this guy, because every instinct that I had in my bones from all the coaches that I ever had told me that's a terrible shot. And yet he kept making them. So finally I realized, all right, let him shoot whatever, you know, let him shoot the crazy ones. He's making the crazy ones. So those are actually good shots.
When it comes to that specific aspect, how much of that do you think is, well, he was born Steph Curry and hitting crazy shots is what he does? And how much of it is that crazy shot is a thing he shot 35,000 times over the course of his life?
Yeah, I mean, it's the incredible self-belief, for sure. And then it's just the daring nature of his game. You know, I think Steph takes great joy and degree of difficulty shots and, you know, putting on a show. I think he's genuinely a showman. You know, he wants to wow the crowd. That gives him incredible joy. And what's amazing about Steph is he's able to do that within the context of winning. You know, there's some guys who are looking to do that and their team isn't winning, and, you know, there's nothing productive that's coming out of it. Steph is doing that. He's putting on a show, but it's helping you win. And I think that's why he captures everybody's imagination. He's just a champion, but he does it in with so much flair that he's impossible not to love when you watch him play.
I assume you're watching the finals games and probably have been watching a number of the semifinals and before that. Have you seen anything specifically in these finals that you will say, you know what, that's something we can take and adapt? Or are you watching it sort of more as a fan because there really isn't a lot to glean from different players doing different systems?
Well, every matchup's different, you know, and we always keep our eyes on what's trending in the league and that sort of thing. But to me, the most interesting thing has just been watching DeAndre Ayton. And I talked to James and text him, and I'm just so inspired by what Ayton has been able to do. And I think there's no reason why James can't follow that same path. What Phoenix has done with Ayton is they've really streamlined his game. You know, you think back a couple of years ago and he was kind of all over the map. You could tell how gifted he was, but you weren't exactly sure what he was. And they've figured it out. And obviously Chris Paul has helped dramatically because he's such a good point guard and passer. And he really makes the game a lot easier for Ayton. But I'm watching Ayton quite a bit. I'm watching Phoenix and I'm thinking a lot about how we can use James and simplify the game and make him really effective for us next year.
Have you gotten a foothold, Steve, onto which way this finals will break after four games? Because it feels like whatever you saw tonight, forget about it. By the time you get back tomorrow night, it's going to be completely different.
I mean, I'm not into predictions because I don't think it's right when you're a coach to predict what's happening in other series. But I just think that for me watching, it's just a reminder of how difficult it is to win a championship, how exhausting it is. You know, you're Monty Williams in Phoenix, you go up 2-0 and you can taste it. And, you know, you go to Milwaukee and you lose 2 and now you're flying home and they've got the momentum. People have no idea just how stressful and exhausting it is. You think about it as a fan, you know, you're a fan of the Warriors and you haven't had a championship in 40 years. You know, you look back to 15 and we're down 2-1. So you think of the frustration that you had as fans. Imagine as coaches and players, you know, you're trying to dig your way out of the hole. And you thinking about that for two straight months of a playoff run where you're going through one playoff series to the next, you know, the stress, the just the grind, the days off don't feel like days off because you're thinking about the next game and the adjustments. And so I look at this series and I see just the back and forth nature of it. And if anything, I just feel really, really proud of our group that we made it to the finals five straight years, because it's not easy going once.
Yeah, no, that's like you said, this ain't the real NBA. This looks like a little bit like the real NBA where it's just a war of attrition and you're kind of maybe halfway lucky to be there. Did you see the Giannis block on Ayton last night? And if you did, do you think that finally lets Iguodala off the hook?
I saw the block. It was incredible. And, Giannis is probably one of only a few guys in the whole league who could make that block. Definitely the play of the game and just amazing athleticism and talent. And it's great stuff. You know, when you're watching the NBA as a fan, I mean, that's the kind of stuff you're looking for. The world's greatest athletes at the height of competition, everything on the line. It's beautiful to watch.
Do you want to talk about foul calls? Do you see the foul on that Booker? I mean, bear hug the guy, no foul. What did you think of that?
I didn't notice anything about the
It's the off season. Come on, Steve.
they can, as far as I know, they can still fine you in July.
The off season does not make you a stupid man, apparently.
Is there anything else other than Ayton that has fascinated you in a non-fan way about sort of where the game is going? I mean, there's been a lot of talk lately about the reemergence of the mid-range game. Do you believe that is going to happen, or is that simply team-specific, that there are just a couple of guys who really thrive on it, and then it's not going to become the wave of the future?
I don't think it ever went away. I think the narrative over the last, five, 6 years has been so heavily on analytics and threes and layups and free throws. But you watch our championship seasons, we were shooting mid-range shot after mid-range shot. You know, Kevin, Clay, and Steph are three of the great mid-range shooters in the game. And so we were, during our five-year finals run, we shot a ton of mid-range shots, and that's exactly what we were looking for, because those are the shots that are generally going to be open. You know, playoff defenses are going to take away the easy stuff at the rim. They're going to try to run you off the line. And if you try to, you know, run to the rim and try to, you know, bang into the big guy who's going vertical and score over the top, you know, good luck. So if you've got, you know, good shooters, then in my mind, you absolutely coach them to take those 15, 17 footers that are there in playoff games, because those things win championships.
All right. So let's go to Team USA. I'm going to avoid my own Joe Vardon moment by not overrating two losses, but I do think it's pretty clear that the U.S. team is the more talented team in virtually every game, but certainly in those two exhibition opening losses. So putting aside whether those losses matter at all, from your perspective as a coach, what are the things that the team could have done better to better maximize their ability in those situations?
Well, the only thing we could have done better in my mind is show up to Las Vegas like 10 days earlier. I mean, honestly, we just needed more practice, but that wasn't going to be the case. It was impossible to make that happen. So, you know, we're playing exhibition games for a reason, because we need to jumpstart this process and be ready for our first game in France 10 days from now, whenever it is. So, you know, you come in, you practice for 4 days, you play a couple of exhibition games. You don't worry too much about, you know, people panicking out there and, you know, telling you you suck and all that stuff, because, you know, it's basketball. This is the NBA. All these teams have NBA guys. You know, Nigeria's got like six NBA players on them. You know, Australia's got the same. Australia's been playing together for years and years and years. They're a great team, and we have to become a team. And basketball is not an all-star game. And so there was no panic for us. I mean, obviously we were frustrated that we lost those two games, but it's just the reality of we need practice, which is what we've been doing, and we're getting better every day, and we're excited about the competition. And you know, we've got three rotation players playing in the finals right now who haven't been part of this, and it's been, you know, along with the COVID stuff, it's been quite a ride, but none of us here are, you know, panicked or worried about all this stuff. We just know we have to work, and that's what it's about.
Steve, obviously, you know, COVID concerns are something we've talked an awful lot about. We know that you're the kind of guy who has bigger, broader concerns over than just beating whatever opponent is in front of you tonight. As a coach of Team USA basketball, you obviously have to be gung-ho about this tournament. As the conscientious member of society that you've always proven yourself to be, how excited are you for this tournament?
Well, it's exciting, and it's different. You know, I mean, when we signed up for this a couple of years ago, it was, you know, how great is it going to be to go to Tokyo and watch the Olympics, play in the Olympics, you know, coach in the Olympics, go to the other events, bring our families. All of a sudden, that's different. I don't think we're going to be going to any other events. Not only are our families not allowed to come, local fans can't come. Local Japanese fans cannot come. So we'll be back in empty gyms again and testing. And so it's an unbelievable challenge, and, you know, not exactly what we had envisioned, but what we have is the basketball part of it, which is really fun. I mean, all of us who are involved with this, we're obsessed with the game. We love the game. We love the challenge of putting together a team and coaching a team and, you know, trying to win a really, really competitive tournament and, you know, be able to go home and say, you know, you won or coached a gold medal team. That's the challenge, and that's the intrigue. The other stuff would have been great, but it's not going to be part of it this year, and so we just got to move on.
Bradley Beal, unfortunately, won't be part of it this year. He's been placed in protocols, and I know that Jeremy Grant is a little bit of a doubt right now. Can you tell us what it's like to be scrambling for who might be coming to Tokyo with us at this 11th hour?
Well, that's when you're glad that you have Sean Ford and Jerry Colangelo, who basically are in charge of USA Basketball. They've been working closely with Pop to kind of sort through, you know, what we're gonna do, how we're gonna, you know, replace Bradley, and that's an ongoing process. And it's just, I just feel so bad for Brad. He's been looking forward to this. He's obviously a great, great player, all-star talent and all-star player, and wanted to play in his first Olympics and really was coming into his own. You know, the last game against Argentina, he had a great game, and, you know, we were really starting to find our rhythm with him as the starting two guard. So it's just such a bummer for him and for his family. And but again, this is 2021, and this is kind of the world we live in, and we're all vulnerable, and we all just have to do what we have to do to survive and keep pushing forward.
Kim, I don't know if the decisions about who's going to replace him have been made or not, but what's the process? Are you in the room when Colangelo and Popovich are talking about it? Or does Greg ask you ahead of time, so what do you think? Or are you out of that process entirely?
No, we you know, we have coaches' meetings every day, and so everybody is aware of what's going on and is included in these conversations. And then there's sidebars. You'll see Jerry and Sean and Pop, you know, go sidebar in the corner of the gym, and, you know, Sean will be on his phone, and I'm sure they're getting updates, and they have access to information that, that, you know, maybe they'll share with us, maybe they won't. But the thing that nobody would realize is this is a pretty complex situation, and Sean Ford has to navigate it because it involves the IOC, the USOC, it involves, you know, which players were submitted to the IOC in terms of who, you know, potential Olympians. And so there's actually, you know, depending on who you get to play, there's a lot of hoops to jump through. It's very complex. There's discussions with teams of, you know, the player that you might ask to come play. There's insurance questions. I mean, this stuff is really complex, and that's what Sean and Jerry are having to sort through right now.
I guess it's kind of an interesting situation being on a coaching staff filled with highly respected, mostly head coaches. Like, a normal coaching staff has a division of labor where, you know, one guy's doing the scout for the Wednesday game, and, you know, this guy is checking on the next opponent's defense. Like, do you guys break out your coaching staff like a normal staff? Is it more of like a college of coaches situation? How different is it?
It's different and unique, and really, I mean, if you coach for a living, I mean, this is a dream to be sitting in these coaches meetings, because you're talking about incredibly accomplished coaches. I mean, Jay Wright and Mark Few. Mark Few was coaching the select team last week with Eric Spoelstra. So you got an NBA champion. You got one of the great college coaches in Few. You know, for the last 20 years at Gonzaga, built this monster program. You got Jay Wright, who's won NCAA championships. And, you know, Ime Udoka is here, you know, new Celtics coach. And you know, Will Hardy and Chip England from the Spurs, who have, you know, the pedigree from the San Antonio program and know Pop, you know, like inside and out. And then Pop sort of, you know, commanding it all. And, you know, Lloyd Pierce and I are, you know, the NBA, you know, the guys from the NBA this past year who are, you know, kind of familiar with the personnel and doing the scouts and that kind of stuff. I mean, it's really fun. I mean, it's just the conversation and the and we just divide up roles. And, you know, honestly, I rebounded for Draymond pregame the other day for his shooting routine. It's the first time I've ever done it. I've been coaching Draymond for 7 years, but I was rebounding for his shooting routine. And that stuff's fun. I mean, it's all new and different and just a wonderful experience.
How's the shot and how many boards you pull down there, big man?
I'm not kidding. Draymond is shooting the hell out of the ball. In whether it's in drills or, I mean, he is playing with a ton of confidence. I think that last couple of months was so good for him you know, after what was a tough season last year. I just think for Draymond and Steph and for us as a team, those last 20 games, even though we didn't get in the play-in tournament, were so important for confidence individually and team-wise. And I think Draymond is in a great place, and I'm so excited to be coaching him this summer and going into next year.
Well, we're excited to get it back at it come next year, and obviously we wish you and the entire Team USA the very, very best of luck. I mean, it's one thing to go compete. It's another thing to compete with a dressing contest every night that Jay Wright is going to be giving you. I mean, has there ever been a guy from college who is the best dressed coach in America?
Yeah, I'm not winning that battle. Fortunately, we have we just have these, you know, uniform outfits that we put on,
right.
You know, slacks and the USA.
The sartorial shirt. World of coaching is moving towards Steve rather than the other way around. It's a beautiful thing.
Thank God for that.
There you go. Soon you'll be in flip-flops and be very, very comfortable. Let's say you have one last conversation with Bob Myers before you get on a plane for Tokyo, and then when you come on back, you'll find out who he drafted. What would be, not the marching orders, but if you could come up with a player, a type, a need, what are you telling Bob you'd love to see happen at 7?
The only thing I have to say is Bob's the one who gives me the marching orders, not vice versa. So that's about it. I'll call him and I'll say, do your thing, and I'll see you when I get back.
Steve, you go do your thing over in Tokyo. Have a great time. Stay safe as a bug in a rug, seriously. And we look forward to seeing you back stateside with a big, fat gold medal hanging off your neck.
Love it. All right. Great to talk to you guys again. Have a good one.
Thank you very much. Steve Kerr.